Florida lawmakers will take another shot at getting a gambling infrastructure in place. Parts of the original deal with the Seminole Tribe of Florida have expired. That, coupled with several pending lawsuits over local gaming referendums, has created a bit of a quagmire that the legislature has to find its way out of. But that's proving to be a hard task. And for the third year in a row, the state's gambling interests will face off in the annual lawmaking session. That's ahead on It's About Florida. Welcome to It's About Florida. I'm Lynn Hatter. Tonight, we're taking a look at an issue some political observers say could force the legislature into overtime: gambling. An attempt to create a new gambling agreement between the state and the Seminole Indian Tribe failed last legislative session, but Florida's legislative leaders say they'd like to see a compact pass this time around. Senate President Joe Negron says approving a gaming agreement with the tribe makes sense, since it brings in dollars from the tribe through revenue sharing. But as Regan McCarthy tells us, the House and powerful Speaker Richard Corcoran may have other ideas in mind.
House Speaker Richard Corcoran has said he'd support passing a new gaming agreement with the tribe, but he also says in order for it to pass in his chamber, it would likely need to reduce gaming in Florida. Meanwhile, Jonathan Zakim, Deputy Secretary of the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, points out the tribe may not have an interest in returning to a deal negotiated last year by Governor Rick Scott's office.
Parties may feel that their positions or bargaining power or whatever the case might be has changed. There may be new elements that are included or some that are taken out, but we can't really speculate on those parts of it.
That's because of a court ruling that has allowed the Seminole Tribe to keep offering card games like blackjack at its casinos, even though a state provision allowing those games has expired. Chief Economist Amy Baker says another consideration is that expanding the types of games allowed in Florida may not actually lead to more money spent here.
People, in effect, have a gambling budget that in their mind that they're willing to spend over a course of the year. And so they may not have it written down on a piece of paper, but they have a portion of their budget, their personal budget, that they think, I would probably gamble this over the course of the year and behave accordingly.
During that last compact negotiation, tribe members pushed the state to expand the number of games allowed under the gambling agreement to include games like craps. The tribe suggested the change would mean more gambling money to share, but Baker says her team doubts that's what would happen.
When you offer new types of gaming or competitive gaming options, largely, it's going to draw down on that gaming budget. I would have spent it over here. I have this new option, so I'm going to spend it over there. And so it's not, for Floridians, largely speaking, it's not new money that you get from gaming options. It's a shifting of the money that they otherwise would have spent.
Lawmakers are also looking into the impact of fantasy sports, racing at dog tracks, and a push by more paramutuals to be allowed to offer slot machines. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy in Tallahassee.
You're listening to It's About Florida. I'm Lynn Hatter, and thanks for joining us. We've been discussing gambling in Florida, specifically whether the state could see more or less casinos, racing, and slots in the state. Gambling is shaping up to be one of the biggest issues lawmakers will tackle in the upcoming session. Or not. Joining us today is attorney Mark Dunbar with the government relations firm Jones Walker. Dunbar represents Gadsden County's Gretna Racing Facility, and he's been involved in the state's gambling conversations for years. Well, Mark, welcome to It's About Florida.
Thanks a lot for having me.
I want you to talk about the state of gambling right now in Florida. Obviously, we have a Seminole Gaming Compact that pieces of it have expired, I do believe, at this point. What's the lay of the land here?
Well, the lay of the land is pretty much in turmoil. You have the Seminole Tribe that lost a portion of their compact, the blackjack. It expired through a legislative inaction. The governor negotiated a new compact, brought it to the legislature. The legislature chose not to act on it. The Seminole Tribe then took the state to court and won the right to continue blackjack. So basically, you have the gambling, but you have none of the financial benefits to the state. It's cost the state about $130 million a year. And that is one of the big challenges that this legislature is facing right now, is how you deal with a tribe after this legal victory. Now, the tribe is paying voluntarily the $130 million, but right now we are in a pretty big state of turmoil.
And there was a recent ruling, too, on Gretna, one of the many areas of the state that has its own racing track, but it's also Gadsden County, one of the many areas that have approved their own independent referendums on things like slot machines.
Correct. And we had a very nuanced participation in the Seminole litigation involving their continued blackjack. And the initial ruling from the federal judge said that the card room activity, the poker and the various card games we were playing at Gretna, could be illegal. And actually, it was a pretty strong suggestion that the current law prohibits those games. We asked the federal judge to clarify that, and he ruled that his ruling on the matter did not apply to Gretna's games, and so Gretna can continue to deal them without worry of this interpretation that somehow the games are illegal. So it was important because that is a critical part of Gretna's current operation and its profitability.
Where does Gretna fit in to the state's overall gambling debate?
Well, right now Gretna is the tip of the spear. We have the case that's pending in the Supreme Court that will sort of be the Damascus moment for the state. If we are successful, Gretna will be able to put in up to 2,000 slot machines and become a full-fledged slot machine casino. And other paramutuals that are sort of copycatting Gretna's effort and have conducted referendums and have applied for their slot machine licenses will also be able to benefit. And what that does is it places the legislature, the state's policymakers, in the situation that, frankly, they need to act. There has been a lot of, I don't want to say apathy, because I think there are some concerned legislators that saw this coming. But from a big picture standpoint, I think the legislature over the last couple of years has really missed the opportunity and has not taken advantage of the leverage they had to contain the gaming, recognize the industry, and make the most of it. Now, with the potential for the Gretna case, you could have the largest expansion of gambling, certainly in Florida's history, and a legislature that has not reacted to it to try and contain it.
And they would lose out potentially on millions of dollars in revenues. It would render possibly the deal that they have with the Seminole tribe defunct.
When Gretna drops the first coin in the slot machine, the remaining $130, $140 million from the Seminole tribe will be shut off. But because 10 other counties have passed referenda and you have, or 9 other counties and 10 facilities that could come online, those facilities will more than make up for all of the Seminole tribe's money under their compact. So from a state standpoint, it's a fiscal push. But you have policymakers that are saying, we don't want our state defined by gambling. And it's a significant expansion when you talk about 10 facilities potentially coming online. And the legislature, I think, will have to react and will react if the Gretna opinion comes down favorably. If Gretna, the opinion does not come down favorably, I think what we will see is a number of facilities going out of business and a ceding of gambling to the Seminole tribe, and they'll basically have a monopoly over the 20 million Floridians and all of our tourists that want to engage in gambling activity outside of Dade and Broward County.
So right now, you know, looking at this issue from a legislative standpoint, you have Senate President Joe Negron, who is in favor of honoring local referendums like the ones passed in Gretna. You have House Speaker Richard Corcoran, who would like to see this entire infrastructure shrink down dramatically. What is that conversation, you know, for people like you, those working kind of inside the system, you know, where is this debate likely to head? Are we heading for another stalemate, or is there any sort of hope that something will come to pass?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with what the Supreme Court says. I think Negron is the consummate pragmatist. I think that he understands the chessboard as well as anybody that has ever been in that office. And he is trying to work through a pragmatic solution, recognizing the votes of his 39 other senators and the general will of the Senate. On the other side, you have an incredibly smart speaker who has been around this process for almost 30 years and knows how to make legislative deals. I think he's holding his cards, pardon the pun, waiting to see what the Supreme Court says, and then he certainly is capable of putting a deal together. And there is a way to achieve contraction. There's no question about it. But the big issue that all these legislators face is trying to pick the winners and losers. There's no scenario that I see, and this will be my 25th legislative session, I don't see a scenario where there aren't losers. And that's just the unfortunate reality that the industry faces, is in right now. And for the policymakers, that's their job, I think. Maximize the revenue, set the policy parameters around the industry, and as best you can, try and do as little harm to incumbent industries, but accept the reality that everybody can't win in this particular game.
So when you say, you know, there's a way to build some sort of, you know, contract to get some sort of consensus, ideally, what would that look like?
Well, that right there is a $64,000 question. You have a lot of dormant parimutuel permits. You have a lot of underperforming parimutuel permits. And the speaker has indicated pretty strongly that he would like to see those permits in some fashion retired. Negron, in his efforts last year and certainly in the Senate bill this year, sees that as a desire of the House and has created a fund to buy active parimutuel permits and retire them. In addition to that, he has placed a mandatory freeze on any new permits being issued, and any permit that's dormant is coming back to the state. So he has mm-hmm. taken the words that the speaker and his surrogates have put out there in the media, and he's trying to achieve some of those gaming contraction discussions. The next question is going to be, is that enough? And if the speaker wants more, where do you go to get them? Where do you go to achieve that contraction? And there really aren't that many options.
How big of a deal is gambling in the state of Florida? Obviously, our number one industry is still tourism. One of the arguments that we originally heard, even if you take it back to some of these municipalities that have passed slots, is that we're going to see an increase, you know, in visitors to our area. It's going to, you know, pull money into the local economy. Is that true? Is that actually panning out? And where does gambling fall, you know, in the state's overall tax structure?
Well, there have been successes on how you use gambling to supplement a tourism economy. There's no question about it. Are we there? Not necessarily. But I'll give you an example. One of my clients is Gulfstream Park. At the end of this month, we are going to host the world's richest race, the Pegasus Cup. We have horsemen and women and their horses coming in from all over the world to compete in this race. We will have tens of thousands of people at Gulfstream Park. It will be televised on NBC, and it will showcase what to me is the best part of the Florida gambling industry. There are 3,000 people that find employment at Gulfstream Park. The indirect benefit of Gulfstream Park as the anchor to Florida's horse racing industry is roughly a $5 billion agricultural economy. So if you're going to talk about gaming policy, you have to recognize there are some things that work. Top flight horse racing exists in Florida. We are where all horsemen want to race their horses in the winter in the hope of racing in the Kentucky Derby or in the Breeders' Cup or in the Dubai Cup or in the Pegasus Cup. The policymakers need to acknowledge that and make sure first you do no harm to that multi-billion dollar economy. And then look at the successes of it. That is a destination venue. There have been $1 billion deployed to support Gulfstream, the infrastructure around it, the $100 million training center that supports it. The Stronach family has invested about $1 billion in the state. And to me, that's the type of incentives you want to create. And you see some of that in Senator Negron's and Senator Galvano's proposal in the Senate. They have incentives for additional people to come in and make that kind of investment. Now you shift over to Gretna. Gretna is a gateway community to Georgia and Alabama. It has the ability, because of where it's located on I-10, to be a regional attractor for people that are interested in gambling as a recreational activity. Right now, they're continuing on down I-10 and going to Biloxi. And we have the ability to stop those folks from South Georgia and from Jacksonville. And it will be transformative to Gadsden County. There's no question about it. The plans are for a $200 million, roughly, casino resort hotel to support the ag complex that's already out there. 1,000 jobs. That's dramatic. Now, shift to another a venue. You go out to Hamilton County. They've passed a referendum. You have a permit holder in Hamilton County that hasn't built a single thing. He races in a field. The state has gone after his permit multiple times. He's already had to surrender his highlight permit. If his referendum is recognized, he could build a warehouse and throw slots in a box, and the benefit is next to none. I mean, that will only draw on the locals and will probably be the worst type of, quote, gambling expansion you can have. And so that's what the policymakers have to struggle with, is who do you reward? And who do you say, no, that's not enough? And that is the Rubik's Cube that they have to solve.
So you just brought it up. You know, obviously not all gambling is created equal. Obviously not all of these local referendums are created equal. Senator Bill Galvano came out late last week with a very big gambling bill, sort of an infrastructure to try and get a handle on this thing. What's in it?
It is 90% of what Senator Negron offered in an amendment in regulated industries last year. So it really, a lot of us refer to it as the Negron Amendment mm-hmm. Plus. And what it did was it lowered the tax rates on the South Florida Parimutuel casinos to 25% from 35% so that they could compete with the Seminole tribe and its facilities down there in Broward County. It allowed for a pathway for decoupling, for facilities that have unprofitable parimutuel operations, for them to cease the unprofitable but continue to be profitable. They will continue to be able to operate card rooms. They'll continue to simulcast. And it had some incredible incentives in there for the horse racing industry. There's when you take all of the pieces as the Negron Amendment was originally drafted, you had close to $50 million in additional purse money that would be available for horsemen and women that race their horses in Florida. That's phenomenal. I mean, that allows Florida to continue to be one of the places of horse racing in the world. But there are some other things that are in there also that are new. He has a couple of new licenses that can be bid for casino licenses in Dade and Broward counties. And there's some concern I'm hearing in the industry that it could lead to more cannibalization and less investment. We're going to have to watch that piece of it get vetted a little more fully to see whether or not it could, that part of the proposal could be more harm than good. But by and large, what Senator Galvano has done is he has listened intently to everybody involved and has tried to put a piece of legislation out there that most people see something for them in it.
How would this legislation affect the deal that we already have with the tribe?
If this legislation passed, it has an effective date that says none of the 112 pages become effective mm-hmm. unless a compact is ratified by the Department of Interior. And I've kidded some that, you know, that the practicality of that is the effective date is the day after never. Because being able to marry up the tribe's compact, particularly in light of their federal court win, with the proposals in the Galvano proposal, I mean, it's very, very difficult to see, one, the tribe accepting it, but the bigger complication is the Department of Interior approving it. It's a two-part process. The tribe executes the compact, and then Interior can reject it and say their exclusivity isn't sufficient. So what I think you're going to see is there is going to be a lot of debate around that effective date. And whether or not the Senate holds that effective date, I think is definitely going to set the stage for how negotiations proceed with the Seminole tribe. But again, I think all of this is noise in the background waiting for the Gretna opinion to come out. And that ultimately is going to force people to get a little more realistic about what's in the proposal.
So right now, you have the Gretna lawsuit hanging over everything. You have the Seminole Compact, which appears to be at odds with the bill that Galvano has put out. This sort of seems like chaos. It sort of seems like nothing is going to be moving anytime soon.
The legislature typically moves large gambling measures when they have to, not mm-hmm. because they want to. And it usually is some type of judicial event or industry event that causes the legislature to have to do it. And I think we are in that, I think that's where we are. We have, in addition to the Gretna case, you have the Seminoles case, which is probably going to be appealed. The decision to appeal is tomorrow. You have two other cases that are filed by pari-mutuels that are pending on appeal in the First District. And I've said this before in different advocacy and testimony in the legislature, is the legislature has to decide whether it wants gambling policy crafted by the courts or crafted by the legislature. And we have been at that moment for a long time. And the legislature, unfortunately, has not acted. And, you know, I took huge issue last year with the way the process was shut down by Senate President Gardner, because that was the perfect time. People needed to move. You had court cases that weren't resolved, and you had what I would have considered a maximum leverage point on the industry. And arbitrarily, he decided to shut the process down, and that's your prerogative when you're the Senate president. But what I said at the time, and I firmly believe now, is we're going to look back and say that was the moment that the legislature abdicated its responsibility to the courts. And we will deal with the fallout from it. And so far, I've been right on, because that cost us $130 million from the Seminole tribe, because they went ahead with their federal lawsuit and they won. I don't think their opinion will be overturned on appeal. The next shoe to drop is Gretna, and there are others to follow. And we're going to look back and say the 2016 legislature is really the one that had the opportunity and swung and missed.
You know, it seems like what's happening is sort of what we just ran into with the death penalty. You know, lawmakers didn't act, even though they saw it coming down the pipeline. The courts forced them to act. They went in, tried to make a change, got kicked out, went in, tried to make another change, got kicked out again. Now here we are, third time. The courts have basically said, you have to do this if you want this thing. I mean, that's pretty much what we're talking about here with respect to gambling. It could eventually end up looking like what we just experienced with the death penalty, ping-ponging back and forth in the courts.
Yeah, there's an irony in you have a legislature in some parts of it that fault the courts for lots of things mm-hmm. and accuse them of activism and such, and death penalty or reapportionment or workers' comp. You know, they bang their fists at the judiciary and accuse them of overstepping their bounds and setting policy. And I'm certainly not proficient in those issues to make a call, but on gambling, I certainly am. And I can tell you that as it relates to where the bulk of the policy has been made over the last decade, it's been made by the courts. And it has been made by the courts not because they want to. It's because the legislature has refused to act. And it's tough. When you have a term-limited legislature and you are cycling through different chairmen every 2 years and you have a regulator that turns over their leadership, we just turned over the leadership of the agency again. It is tough to have people that have a big picture and are able to say, no, this is the direction we need to go. And I get it, but you can't castigate the court on one hand for doing its job when you're not doing your job on the other.
So right now, no one has any incentive to negotiate anything. The Seminoles got their court ruling. They really have no incentive to negotiate. Galvano's bill, will possibly crumble under the weight of all of this impending litigation. And House Speaker Richard Corcoran really has no incentive to negotiate. So ultimately, we could end up, if what I'm hearing is correct, we could very well end up in another stalemate.
We could, but I will tell you, Senator Galvano, and when he was a representative and was in charge of this in 2009, was very shrewd and made a lot of good calls with his partner in the Senate, Senator Jones. And they put a lot of people in the industry, including the Seminole Tribe, they put their back against the wall a little bit and said, if you do not come to the table and involve yourself and your principles in meaningful good faith negotiations, I have an alternative piece of legislation I'd like to show you. And that goes back to what I was saying about the effective date. If the Senate takes the effective date out and says this act will take effect upon becoming law, upon the governor's signature, that's exactly what they did in 2009. And the Seminole Tribe looked at it and said, that is a serious threat to our empire, and that's a problem. We will come back to the table because of that threat. That's exactly what they did. My recommendation and advocacy would be that's what they would do again. And let the House do exactly what the House did the last time, which is pass a contrary view, which is we believe the Seminole Tribe Compact should be approved. And what happened? Those bills crossed in messages. They were tied to the budget. A conference was impaneled to go along with the budget conference, and the conferees worked it out. And for the most part, what was worked out in 2009 was pretty solid. Absent what I think is a indefensible attorney general opinion misinterpreting a clause, we wouldn't even be in this situation. But I think the legislature was the way they played it last time around was successful, and I think if they follow that pattern this time, that is the best recipe, I think, to try and get people. Again, will everybody be happy at the end of the day? Mm-hmm. No. Was everybody happy in 2009 when they left? No, not necessarily. But did it create a stable 5 years for us to evaluate the industry? Yes, it did. And frankly, that's what they should have done last year in 2016. And that, to me, is the big swing and miss that occurred.
How likely is it that they can do something this year?
They're very likely if the Speaker has the will. And that's really at the end of the day. If the Speaker, and he has an incredible chairman that has spent a lot of time learning this issue. Representative Diaz is probably, in the last decade, probably the most solid chairman I've seen handling the issue other than Senator Galvano. And so you have a great person to put out there. And he's supported by good staff and his subcommittee chairman. Chairman LaRosa is very solid. So I think you have a good House team to match up against a very good and knowledgeable Senate team. You just have to have the will of the leaders and the empowerment of the managers to get it done. And I feel like we have that on the Senate side. I think that's been very clearly communicated. The real issue is going to be whether or not Speaker Corcoran, and to use his words, wants to dance.
And as he has said last session, he might not be inclined to dance.
That's right. That's right.
So, full Mark Dunbar, thank you so much for joining us on It's About Florida today.
Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks to Jones Walker's Mark Dunbar. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance. Please join us again next month for more discussion on the issues impacting our state.